Washington officials are like moths drawn to the flame of Silicon Valley. They see it as a source of talent, ideas, and technology, and it is. But it's not the only place they can find those things. Virginia venture capitalist Jonathan Aberman argues a more careful approach to acquisition can tease out the best from industry, no matter what the location.
I believe that what we should now be looking at is separating the R&D and talent scouting function from the acquisition of commercially available technologies. And that
so what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that we conflate the two, and that makes it harder for us to find a way forward. So, for example, the Pentagon is out in the valley now with the DUIX program, and DHS is about to open up an office, and that's designed
Silicon Valley, that's
designed to get innovators that aren't currently working with the national security establishment to work with them. Really, what they're trying to do is they're trying to find new talent. You know, people that could provide something interesting. And by the way, that's what Tandem NSI is doing here in the Mid-Atlantic region through our funding with the Commonwealth in Arlington County. So R&D, talent scouting, you know, finding the next new thing is one function.
Well, talent is one thing. The products of talent is something else.
Exactly. And what I'm seeing now is people are starting to appreciate that what you have to do to attract a garage inventor is very different from what you have to do to get an established company to do business with the federal government. And there are two different cultures, there are two different sales cycles, and frankly, there are two different types of things you have to do to attract them. So, for example, recently we did a white paper for one of the local agencies and pointed out that if you want to attract garage inventors, the most important thing to do is to find a way to give them $100,000 really quickly as a way to help them build a prototype. On the other hand, if you want to get somebody who's actually got a product, you have to provide them with a rapid way to contract with the government that's going to provide them with a meaningful customer.
And some revenue maybe before delivery.
Possibly, but at least a path to revenue relatively quickly. So what I learned through the panel that we did with the Professional Services Council and Northern Virginia Technology Council on the 29th of October, you know, that was with representatives from InQtel and Booz Allen and the Pentagon, is that they're starting to see that there's a separation between the two. Now, here in the D.C. region, when people talk about acquisition reform, what they're really talking about generally is how do we get small businesses and larger businesses into a situation where they can sell to the national security establishment. And I believe that in those circumstances, the contractual vehicles are available already. The challenge is getting the cultural connection. So, for example, I have an acquaintance I spoke with, the CEO of a local company that has a technology that he sells in the commercial sector that he believes would be incredibly useful to a couple of the agencies. But he is used to a sales cycle where he goes and talks with the CEO. So he keeps going to the agencies and says, I want to talk with the undersecretary. And they keep saying, go talk with the contract officer. And he says, well, I don't want to talk with the contract officer. I want to talk with the decision maker. Not understanding that in the world of national security and agencies, the contract officer is the person you have to talk with.
But many of the contracting officers are, frankly, not necessarily equipped to judge what's in front of them, whether, wow, this is the thing that could really save a program.
Exactly.
I mean, they exist almost in a vacuum away from programs.
Right.
You always hear about how to get the contracting officer on the team and so forth, but the reality is they operate in isolation.
The reality is, again, the issue is what I'm learning as I spend more time in this world is that the issue is not the rules need to be fixed necessarily as much is that the rules have to be applied in a cultural way that provides permeability for entrepreneurs.
And I want to ask you again about that revenue question we spoke about a moment ago, because there is a model for that at the way opposite end of the spectrum. And I'm thinking of the bomber contract, now under protest, that was just released by the Pentagon to Northrop Grumman. This has actually been an ongoing program. There has been funding for prototype parts and bits and pieces for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this contract is not for the volume of however many 100, 200, 500 bombers they're eventually going to build, but it's really an intermediate development type of contract. So they can do it for the Lockheeds and the Northrop Grummans and those companies
right. In
terms of seeding eventual products. The question is, why doesn't that translate down to the entrepreneur level?
Well, I think you've actually identified a third part of the acquisition business, the acquisition world that I wasn't touching on as much because I tend to focus on small business and entrepreneurial businesses. There is a whole other part of this puzzle, which is what I would call big iron or big systems. like a submersible, you know, an attack sub, like an F-35, like a strike bomber, that's a completely different flavor of things. And what I would say there is that has probably got significant cultural challenges as well, because of the way we tend to gild the lily in how we acquire weapons platforms. We don't have the issue of minimally acceptable technology when it comes to a strategic weapons platform. And so what I will say to you, Tom, is that, again, the Pentagon has a really interesting challenge, which is they want to reach innovators in the garage. They want COTS, commercially available technologies, and yet they also want to have a supply chain that will be able to satisfy large strategic initiatives. And in each case, what we have now is we have a set of rules that are designed to keep people from being able to engage in patronage, which is really what the government contract rules design. But we've taken it so far away from the ability for there to be patronage that we have a situation where the people who are making decisions on the contracts are not necessarily connected with the people who need the technology. And I see that all over the place these days.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman. He is the chairman of Tandem NSI and of Amplifier Ventures. But you mentioned so that the entrepreneurs want to speak to They don't want to speak to the contracting officer. They want to speak to the secretary or the deputy secretary. What about the program managers? They're the ones with the money and the need.
And I think that, again, this is a question of we need in this region and generally, we need to help entrepreneurs understand better who the decision makers are. So Tandem NSI, as we've talked about in the past, when we have our events, we tend to bring the program managers in. Here's a great example. So we're going out to Silicon Valley, San Diego and Seattle next week to help promote a DARPA program called Robotics Fast Track. Really innovative program, very interesting contractual approach designed to give innovators $100,000, $150,000 in 30 to 60 days to develop interesting robotics technology for this DARPA program. We're bringing out or we're assisting and bringing out a program manager, the guy who ultimately oversees the program, plus the contract intermediary. So when we have these meetings, which are going to be in places where entrepreneurs congregate, they're going to learn about the program, and then they're going to have an opportunity to have a one-on-one five-minute conversation with the program manager about their idea and whether or not it's interesting. And then opportunities are collected, and then the entrepreneurs know who to send the proposal to, and the contract intermediary knows who's going to be sending the proposals. This is an example of what, at least in the early stages of garage innovators, the Pentagon should be doing on a regular basis. It's a great template. Now, when you get into the medium-sized COTS-type products or large acquisitions for programs, you're going to have to do things like have open architecture. You're going to have to do things like provide for rapid contracting, prototyping to commercial delivery. But again, these are all things that can be done within the current rules if we're willing to advocate and support a cultural change.
And you also have to have competition at some point at that level. That's also legally required.
Absolutely. And I think that any entrepreneur will tell you that they are very happy for there to be competition, because when there's competition, there's opportunity. It's rare that I find that anybody who is involved in the private sector, other than a large incumbent, will say to you, I don't want competition. Because the people that generally are promoting a new innovation, or the people that are involved in growing a business, relish competition because they think they're going to win. The only people in a system that don't want competition are the ones that feel they have an incumbent advantage. And maybe that's the biggest issue that's surrounding all this, which is that ultimately, what the Pentagon and other agencies need to do is need to understand that if they're getting their advice from a small group of people who benefit from a continuation of the status quo, they may not be getting the best advice about how to find a broader spectrum of people.